Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Monday, the 18th of April, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. We re-air at 7 o'clock in the evening. Lineup for today's show is a good one, our Monday political face-off, today featuring commentators Bruce Ash and Jeff Rogers. At the bottom of the hour, a newsmaker interview with Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias. Mr. Elias will be here. Then we'll round out the show with a conversation with Jim Glock, City of Tucson's Transportation Director. The Buckmaster Show is primarily interview-driven. However, there's always room for your questions and comments. You can call us on our live line at 529-3508. It is Monday morning. That means our political face-off with commentators Bruce Ash, National Republican Committeeman for Arizona, and Jeff Rogers, the chairman of the Pima County Democratic Party. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
Let's start off with the Senator Al Melvin op-ed piece, his letter to the Arizona Daily Star today. Senator Melvin defending his vote on what he called an honest, gimmick-free balanced budget. He says it's the first time we have had such in many years. Jeff Rogers, do you agree it was gimmick-free?
Well, I kind of consider sweeping money from cities and counties to be a bit of a gimmick. If you're balancing the budget on the backs of city councils and boards of supervisors and expecting them to send you revenue that would otherwise go to them, if you don't consider that a gimmick, well, maybe it was gimmick-free, but they did balance it on the backs of both the cities and the towns and of the people in this society who are least able to take care of themselves. And some of the things that they are expecting to do, such as cut people from the rolls of access, may or may not happen, creating another budget deficit almost immediately, and I'm suggesting probably won't happen, so that they'll have to revisit this issue probably in the fall again.
Bruce Ash. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
What did you think of the Melvin op-ed piece?
Well, as you might expect, I think that Senator Alvin spoke his mind and spoke a lot of sense. The voters of the state of Arizona overwhelmingly elected Republicans to go to the legislature and to fix the budget. And that's what they did. And yes, there is some sharing of the pain that is going on with cities and counties. And living here in Tucson, I don't like to see it any more than anybody else, but it is a tiny fraction of the state budget when you're looking at the totality of those cuts. This budget addresses systemically the problems that we've had over the last several years with the state budget. And what's amazing is that it was all Republicans, not because they didn't encourage Democrats to participate, but because they had nothing to offer. They didn't want to offer anything. And here we are in Tucson, the center city of Tucson, with LDs 27, 28, and 29, literally with no representation in the Arizona State Legislature.
Well, it's hard to say there's no representation. There's no representation because they're not Republicans. The fact is that none of the Democratic ideas were considered. There was not even one thought given to enhance our revenues so that we could get away from what is basically 30 years of nothing but tax cuts based on a booming economy that doesn't exist anymore. We should not have done the last several tax cuts in the last 10 years and should have saved that money for a rainy day, which we're in right now. But we didn't do that, and now we're in a position where we don't have enough revenue to fund the things that Arizonans consider important, like, for instance, jobs and the economy and the growth of both, and secondly, education, both K-12 and higher education, both of which were completely gutted by this Republican budget. So the fact is that we're not doing the things that the mainstream of Arizona wants us to do. We're instead focusing upon the more extremist ideologies of people like Bob Melvin and Frank Antonori and perhaps Mr. Bruce Ash.
I don't mind being called a conservative, but I don't think it's extreme to be a conservative. And in this case, the Republican legislature did pass a very aggressive jobs bill, And I think it will show benefits as the years roll by. The problem here in Arizona is not that people feel that they they're undertaxed. They feel that they are overtaxed, and it's not a matter of government and what they can do for you. It's how you protect yourself from government, and that's what this legislature has probably addressed, as well as any in our recent past.
You know, I think a lot of people would take issue with Senator Melvin's comment. Saying you, being the Arizona Daily Star, he's referring to you, ignore the inefficiencies that are present in our university system that increase the cost of an education without improving the quality of that education.
Let me be rather blunt about the problem with this state legislature. It would be really difficult to find a least educated bunch of people than we've got running this state legislature.
Anti-intellectual
bias? It is anti-intellectual. It's anti-education of a degree of nothing I've ever seen. I mean, it's Al Melvin and many of the Republicans in this state legislature, they don't have much of an education.
Al's a graduate of the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy. He's been an academician most of his adult life.
Most of these people don't have any kind of education, so they don't appreciate the benefits of an education. And that's part of the problem we've got. We've got to elect better people to this state legislature, and I think we will once the Independent Redistricting Commission gets finished with its work this year. I'm optimistic that we're going to have better drawn, more competitive districts, and we're going to get rid of some of these people who are so anti-education that they really want, deep, deep, deep in their hearts, I believe, that they really want to privatize all education.
Well, I don't know where you come up with privatizing education as a goal here in Arizona, Jeff. And look, let's view this thing from maybe 5,000 feet and not at ground level. It's not that we don't fund Arizona education at I think it's approximately 25% of the total state budget. There's no single area that receives more attention than education. I think that there is truly controversy and good debate that ought to happen about how we deliver those services. And I'm not sure that when you look at test scores going back over the past 10 years, that no matter how much money we've thrown at education, our children still are not succeeding. And that's the problem. And the problem is not that we're not spending enough money. The problem is how we're spending it.
Well, when you're consistently in the bottom 5 to 10 of all states spending money on K-12 education, you will get what you pay for. And if you're not paying for it, you won't get any results.
We spend more, Jeff, than any other country in the world on education, yet we don't get the kind of results.
Not in this state.
Parochial schools, Catholic and Jewish day schools in this, actually right here in this county, spend approximately half of what's spent in TUSD and the other school districts, and they don't have a fraction of the problems with school dropouts, with the lack of achievement, with violence, and so on that we show in all the various school districts. And we haven't even gotten to the university system yet.
Well, you know, Bruce, we've only got about a couple of minutes for the break, and I know that speaking of the university system, what is your problem with what's going on with UMC, and why is the legislature trying to get involved in the UMC situation and the management?
Well, I think the legislature has become
involved. Give us the bottom line here.
In HB 2067, because Dr. Shelton and the Arizona Board of Regents are trying to confiscate, I think, about $150 million of cash reserves that UMC Hospital has built up. They are trying to sack the current leadership, which has been running that that hospital very efficiently, and they're trying to take those monies, which have been devoted to development of the life sciences colleges, and now spread that out amongst the entire university in order, I believe, to make up for other budget funding. And we saw the results of this back in the 80s when the academic side of the University of Arizona was running that hospital. I believe that we do need to have some new partnerships and so on. But as long as the taxpayers are going to be held accountable for the bills at UMC, there needs to be community watchdog involvement. And that's what the Biggs Amendment on 2067 is, and that matter will be discussed today in conference committee. Interestingly enough, and follow the money, folks, with both Russell Pierce and Kirk Adams, as well as Senate and House leadership from the Democrat side.
Well, that bill would basically put political cronies, presumably appointed by this governor in charge of running University Medical Center
and
other people. Now, the fact of the matter is, I know Bruce has this conspiracy theory because I've seen his extensive blog postings on some of the blogs, but the fact of the matter is, in most places in America where you have a university running a research and teaching hospital, it is controlled by the university because its first goal is the teaching of doctors and preparation of doctors whom we hope will stay in this state. So there is some sense in having some control by academics over the teaching at a teaching hospital. Now, this is also something that's been under debate, and this plan has been out there for more than a decade, and then suddenly we have a knee-jerk reaction from this legislature saying, we're going to wrestle control of University Hospital because we don't trust academics. You know, again, another anti-academic, anti-education rant by the Republican Party and by the leadership.
Interestingly enough,
in the
state. Jeff, it was Democrats who came to me and asked for my assistance on this, not Republicans.
Okay, we're going to take a break right there. This is the Buckmaster Show. It's the Monday political face-off, and as usual, the fireworks are flying. We'll talk a little bit about redistricting. We also have a caller ready to go right after this break.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
It's 20 minutes now past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. It's Monday Political Face-Off. Jeff Rogers is to the left, microphone left of me, and Bruce Ash is mic right. I think a couple of weeks ago we had it just the opposite.
And that's just wrong.
We corrected it today. Caller Bill is on the Buckmaster Show live line. I think this will be directed to Bruce Ash. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, good morning. You know, when you make sweeping statements like this, an enormous mandate, if you look, for example, at Legislative District 26, Senator Melvin won by 255 votes. I don't think that's an overwhelming mandate. There are some that are very large differences, but I don't think that you can say that there's an overwhelming mandate in this state. I think it's very close and very divided in this state, and that's why it's so heated.
With all due respect, Bill, that wasn't the margin of victory in Senator Melvin's election. And
it was. I'm looking at it on the internet right this second.
And when you look at vote counts throughout the state, not just Republican voters, but independents as well as Democrats spoke with a very loud voice in the last election. And they said, cut the budget, end the deficits, reduce taxes on us, reduce the amount of government that we have on us.
You need to look it up. You need to be honest when you talk to people. I don't think you're honest.
Bill, give me, you said you're looking at it right now.
I'm looking at the Arizona Secretary of State.gov/election website.
And what was the margin?
255 votes, 38,180 to 37,435.
Well,
that's the difference.
Well, and Bill, if it was, what difference does that have to make with the mandate?
Because it's not an overwhelming mandate. You say overwhelming.
It was an overwhelming mandate. When you look at the number of legislators, Republican legislators who were elected, as well as the overall vote counts, it was overwhelming.
Okay, Jeff.
Well, Bill, this crisis didn't happen overnight, and it wasn't just one election in the making. This started 10 years ago when, frankly, to tell you the honest God truth, Democrats got caught with their pants down. They weren't prepared for the first redistricting process. We didn't have the proper candidates out there to be on the redistricting commission, and we ended up, instead of an independent redistricting commission, we had something that was really basically 4-1 in support of Republicans, a Democrat that wasn't thoroughly loyal and an independent who was relatively conservative, although I can say a lot of great things about Steve Lim, but I don't think that the process was very independent. So this crisis we have in Arizona took 10 years to unfold, and it unfolded as a complete result of the very, very poorly drawn, uncompetitive districts that were created in 2001. And I expect that that's going to completely turn around. And in addition to fairly drawn, competitive districts and the backlash we're going to see against the Republicans, we're going to see an extraordinary sweep in 2012 in this state, and they'll have to answer for the kind of crazy things they've been doing in the Capitol this past year.
Well, I won't go into the politics that Jeff just countered with, but what I will say is I think that the people who look at how to draw the lines in this particular redistricting are going to look at the influence of independents on recent elections and the growth of independents over the past 10 years. This is a factor that was not anywhere close in 2001. It'll have a big part of what is a competitive district and communities of interest as well.
We'll have Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias commenting on this next. We're speaking of redistricting. Let's talk a little bit about the supervisory redistricting. Countywide, there are roughly 186,000 Democrats, 151,000 Republicans, and 146,000 independents. So none of those voting blocks, really, Jeff Rogers, has a massive advantage, do they?
No, but the Democrats' advantage is distinctly larger than in most cases and in most other counties in the state. On top of that, the independents in Pima County and in the city of Tucson tend to vote more Democratic than Republican in most elections, hence the 5-2 margin on the city council and the 3-2 margin on the Board of Supervisors. So I think that, you know, that is why historically this entire county is sort of the bluest part of the state.
Well, on a statewide basis, Democrats are now in third place amongst registration. And again, you know, my comment about overwhelming majorities. I think on a statewide basis, probably on a countywide basis, depending upon the supervisorial district, you have a lot more Republicans and independents who band together to vote for candidates. I'm hoping that Jeff will consider and that the Board of Supervisors will consider a plan that we'd like to put together, which would take redrawing the supervisorial districts away essentially from the Board of Supervisors, which essentially it was in 2001, and give two Republicans, appointed by Brian Miller, two Democrats appointed by Jeff Rogers, as well as an independent. And there are a number of them that serve on the County Elections Integrity Commission. And go about this over the next several months. You have to have a preclearance map for Justice Department by September 1st. You have to have the whole thing flushed out by the end of the year, as we want our elected officials and candidates to be able to have a chance to start their campaigns right after the first of the year.
Well, it's certainly an interesting proposition. The first I heard of it was just a few days ago when Brian Miller called me and said, let's sit down and talk about this. And I think it's certainly worth looking at and talking about. It might be a little late for this year to implement such a process, but it's certainly something we ought to look at in the future. And I look forward to talking with my supervisors about that and with the Republican supervisors as well. But it's a thoughtful, you know, approach for how to possibly address the issue.
And I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference in terms of how many likely supervisor candidates are going to win, Democrat or Republican. But I think what it does is it helps restore faith for voters and for constituents as to the process being open and the process having not just placeholders, but real stakeholders who are there involved in the process. And when there is constituent comment on this, hopefully have people who are accountable to the people who are going to be right there in the crowd. That hardly existed the last time we changed supervisorial districts. There was little...
when was the last time?
2001.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to do that every 10 years.
And just to clarify, this is different than the state.
Yes. Different than the state, although okay. It sounds like it's somewhat of the same. Yeah,
because
same
we've been hearing about the redistricting in state districts. This is kind of the first we're talking now about supervisors.
And it is different. And one of the things that really sort of sparked my interest was the memo that the county administrator put out. There are 417 precinct committees in Pima County. The county administrator wants to reduce the number of precincts in Pima County down to 200. And even though Jeff thinks I'm a conspiracy guy, I'm really not. I think that it's better to have all of these different areas of interest, these little communities, you know, my neighborhood, the neighborhood next to me, and so on. And if it's a matter of voting, you know, booths and so on, well, heck, you know, we vote double up, you know, in mine and the next door neighborhood with us right now anyway. We could do the same thing.
Well, part of the reason to cut back on these precincts is because so many people are voting by mail. And so we really are having to continually consolidate precincts into what we call voting areas.
We'll talk to Supervisor Richard Elias next about this. And we want to thank Jeff Rogers and Bruce Ash for being with us. We'll see you, gentlemen, down the road, as they say, coming up on 30 past the hour on the Buckmaster Show.
Political views collide.
This is exactly what I'm talking about.
Tucson's Jolt.
Tucson's Jolt.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Stocks are tumbling after Standard & Poor's lowered its outlook for long-term debt in the U.S. Chief Economist David Weiss explains the decision.
We have affirmed the AAA rating on U.S. government debt, but what we are saying is that on the current path, it's not going to stay that way forever. We have some significant worries about the long-term outlook.
The Dow right now is down over 200 points. People in North Carolina are picking up the pieces.
Well, the question you got to ask yourself, why here?
The severe storms in the South killed at least 45 people, almost half of them in North Carolina. Remote-controlled robots found high levels of radiation in two of the reactors at the damaged nuclear plant in Japan. The death toll from the earthquake and tsunami is closing in on 14,000. Officials from the FAA will visit airport control towers across the country beginning in Atlanta today. Controllers face new rules to help prevent them from falling asleep on the job. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
My dad's Mercedes E-Class has 26,000 miles on it, but I'm taking it to a billion zillion.
Of all the things you hand down to your children, very few will be of the quality of a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz. Come in during our certified pre-owned sales event and get the Mercedes-Benz you've always wanted. Now, with an optional factory-backed extended limited warranty, your vehicle may be covered for up to 7 years or 135,000 miles, plus roadside assistance and 3 months of Sirius satellite radio. Every certified pre-owned vehicle undergoes rigorous inspections by factory-trained technicians to meet the uncompromising standards of Mercedes-Benz. And right now, get exceptional 1.99% financing on select models.
Thanks in advance, Dad.
Hurry into the Mercedes-Benz Certified Pre-Owned Sales event now through May 2nd. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, it's not certified pre-owned.
See dealer or call 1-800-FOR-MERCEDES for complete program including certified pre-owned limited warranty and Sirius satellite radio details and limitations. Not all customers will qualify for advertised APR and are subject to prior credit approval.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza. Topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It is 35 minutes past the hour. I am Bill Buckmaster. This is the Buckmaster Show, and Richard Elias, Pima County Supervisor, is joining us now live in studio. Richard, good to see you.
Good morning, Bill. Good to see you.
Well, we were just, as you were listening, talking to Bruce Ash and Jeff Rogers. They've got some ideas about maybe I know the supervisor are preparing a new map to submit to the U.S. Department of Justice for approval. And what this is redistricting the districts that each of the supervisors run for election in. So what are some of your thoughts? You heard what Bruce and Jeff were saying about appointing perhaps two Republicans, two Democrats, and an independent to redraw the lines.
Well, my instinct is to say that we've done a pretty good job of redistricting in the past. I think we had some pretty good districts that, in fact, were even pretty competitive in some interesting kind of ways, especially over in District 3. So I'm not so sure that we need to go down that path of having an independent redistricting committee per se. We are in an odd situation that we have two majority-minority districts that need to be protected. And one of those, District 5, that I represent, has actually lost some population. So we're going to need to add some people to District 5 in order to make it more balanced with regards to the other four districts. So we're going to be receiving as opposed to being donors. So I don't know. I think it's fairly straightforward what we need to do in terms of creating some districts that protect those majority-minority districts as required by the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
Which says one man, one vote.
Right.
Federal requirement.
Absolutely. And I think also we have some situations where we can expand out into District 4 and take some of those voters out there that in fact fit into that community concern in Midtown that I already represent. So I think we'll have some interesting moves that'll make the districts a little more fair and can be accomplished pretty easily without going through a big extended harassment of ultimately people and ugly accusations that go along with redistricting sometimes. So I don't know. That's my angle on it at this point.
And there was a piece, speaking of redistricting, in the Star yesterday, and your colleague on the board, Pima County Supervisor Republican Ray Carroll, contending that there's been some rampant gerrymandering going on.
Well,
do you see any validity in that comment?
Well, you know, I think Ray just has some disgruntled feelings because he's never sat in the majority while he's been on the Board of Supervisors. But that's ultimately because of some registration difficulties that the opposition party has had over the years. We've seen more independents register over time and the Democratic advantage increase over time. So to me, it sounds a little disingenuous to hear Ray complaining about gerrymandering when he has an extremely safe district and has been elected with only opposition in one race while he sat on the board for, I don't know, eons, it seems like, probably the more than 14 years at this point. It's kind of sour grapes is when you get down to it.
39 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias is with us. Certainly, this budget process up in Phoenix has not been helpful to cities and counties around the state. What's the latest number that you see as far as the shifting of costs from Phoenix to Pima County?
Well, the impact on this year's budget is about $19 million. About $15 million of that is in decisions that were made this year. $4 million of that comes from some decisions made last year about 204, which is healthcare money that was taken away from Pima County for this year during last year's session. The $15 million this year, about 6.7 in cold hard cash that we have to give them that they have not said what they're going to use it for or what departments it's going to go to. About $7 million worth of highway user revenue funds, which is really debilitating to the private sector here, where they're just not going to be able to create jobs to fix these roads that ultimately need to be fixed. So those are really damaging. And then next year, we are going to face having to house prisoners who have less than 1 year at county jail. That's going to be extremely difficult. Prisoners that are in state prison are very different from prisoners in county jail. You have no idea how big that number is going to be. So it's a big variable. And that's coming up for next year's budget. So they've damaged us here in Pima County considerably.
Yeah, maintenance on county roads. I mean, digging ourselves into a real hole in our infrastructure is how the chief deputy county administrator put it.
Absolutely. It doesn't even make sense. I don't think they understand the impacts to the private sector that they're making with these very bad decisions.
Tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show, we have a debate on Rosemont Copper. As you saw the Tony Davis piece from the Arizona Daily Star, Supervisor Elias, in yesterday's piece about the big hitters, big business leaders, dozen or so union leaders, most from the Phoenix area, are backing Rosemont. They want a very quick decision, or at least a decision, certainly, on whether this is going to happen or not by January. But there's still some important areas that Pima County must sign off on, correct?
That's correct. You know, what is the value of a set of mountains that exist in your backyard where tourism is one of your main industries? What is the value of God's work over millions of years? I don't know how you figure that out, but certainly fast-tracking it to make a quick decision doesn't sound like a very good idea to me. I've been an opponent of Rosemont since the very beginning. I will continue to be. It's problematic in so many ways, but certainly those members of the business community who signed that letter have their interests at heart, and I understand that. They're going to make a lot of money if Rosemont is able to build that mine up there, but they've never operated a mine. They're talking about building a hole that's half a mile deep in the beautiful Santa Rita Mountains. So protecting our natural resources as citizens of Pima County becomes really something that we have to do if we're going to be good stewards of the earth, if we're going to be good stewards of the finances in our community. And I feel very bad that these folks would want to fast track something like this over the sake of the profits that are going to be created by this. Public sector job, private sector jobs, very important as well during this period. But as I said, what's the value of a beautiful set of mountains that was put here as a part of this creation that we share and enjoy? And what's the value of those natural resources? I say that's not something you fast track. That's something you make a sound decision about.
The Rosemont debate is at 9:05. It'll be our lead tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. And quickly, Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias, the county is considering its own TV channel. What is that about? I know that the meetings, your weekly board meetings, are currently carried on the city's Tucson 12 cable channel.
Correct. And typically we get cut off when the city goes on the air. Recently it's been as early as 11 o'clock. That's okay with me. I don't know. It appears that Mr. Huckleberry has had an epiphany about how we get out communications and ideas about Pima County and what we're doing. It's probably an idea that's good. We're going to have to see where the money's going to come from. I haven't really had a chance to talk to him about it, so I'm unsure how I'm going to vote on it. It's of great concern, but then again, during these difficult times, I think it's most important for people to know what services are available to them and how they can most easily reach them in a quick, efficient manner. Does a TV station do that for you? Well, I think it does part of that work.
Well, there is the channel is there, right?
Right. We have a channel that we can use, and certainly that discussion has gone on for many years, and Chuck has always been very reticent to even talk about it with anybody. So, like I said, apparently he's had an epiphany.
So we'll have to see how all of that plays out. And quite a smile there from Richard Elias. So, you know, getting back to the bottom line with this, we've got about a minute to go, but this budget really is going to do a lot of damage for Pima County, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's going to hurt us tremendously. We have some money in our fund balance, but that's quickly dwindling. Our tax base is shrinking. It's going to continue to for the next 3 to 5 years. This year, it's gone down about 10 to 13 million. Less is being created by the levy we currently have. So the $20 million that we're going to lose this year really does hurt us in a very, very bad way. Bad decisions. I don't know when it became a conservative value to have somebody else pay your bills, but apparently that's what the legislature has dwindled itself to.
Now, we're going to be talking about roads and roads within the city, certainly. Jim Glock is our next guest here on the Buckmaster Show. And for those of us that live in the county and we're waiting to get some maintenance, that may have to be delayed. And we can thank our friends up the road in Phoenix. Correct, Richard?
That's what I would say. It's unfortunate, but those potholes are going to remain for a while.
Richard Elias has been our guest on the Buckmaster Show, and we will see him down the road. And it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. 46 minutes now past the hour. Jim Glock, City Transportation Director, is next.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Canada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit AssistanceLeagueTucson.org.
Coming up on 50 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. Check out our website, buckmastershow.com. For the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about roads and transportation in the city of Tucson with Jim Glock, the City of Tucson Transportation Director. Mr. Glock, always good to talk to you. Thanks, Jim.
Good morning, Mr. Buckmaster. Good to hear you, too.
Good to hear you. All right, let's begin with the bus situation, and bus fares are going to be going up. And I wondered, are you hearing with gas prices now approaching, well, certainly $4 a gallon here in Tucson? We do have some of the lowest prices in the country. Still, gas prices are going up. Do you think bus ridership will go up as well?
Bill, the last time we saw gas approach the $4 mark, we did see an uptick in our bus ridership. So we would anticipate the same as people start making decisions with respect to how they get around based upon their pocketbook.
How is SunTran doing, Jim?
They're actually doing a great job. We are getting the service out there. We are challenged on some of our routes with overcrowding. And so at some point in the future, we may want to add more service along those routes to address that particular issue. So, but other than that, we're doing well. The system's in good shape. They're, the management company's taken steps to try to curtail some costs and have done that within the variables that they have at their disposal. The one of the challenges we have with the transit system is that they're also buying gas and buying diesel fuel. And so when the price goes up, they also have their costs go up. And their costs tend to go up faster than we see the increased revenue from the passengers switching over to the system.
Let's talk about downtown. We're talking with Jim Glock, Tucson Transportation Director. The proposed, well, 3.9-mile streetcar route, which will connect the University of Arizona to downtown, running from University Medical Center through the campus and downtown and ending up on the west side of Interstate 10 at the Santa Cruz River. What is the situation now as far as getting the infrastructure ready for this project? How is this going to be attacked?
Well, we have the bid for the bridge in, and we're evaluating that. That's looking good. We, at this point in time, have broken the work along the streetcar line up into four line segments: west side, downtown, 4th Avenue, main gate, and then the campus. And we're seeing some opportunities to combine those line segments to give us some economies of scale and to give some flexibility with respect to actually building the streetcar line. If we have one contractor over more of the line segments, if we happen to need to move off of out of an area because of a special event like the street fair, we'll then be able to keep the contractor busy working elsewhere on the line. It's our anticipation to have all of the line segments under construction by the end of this calendar year. The cars, which are being manufactured in Clackamas, Oregon, are under design. The trucks that the actually will move the cars along the streetcar line are being manufactured in Pennsylvania. The car body design is being finalized, and so we're anticipating the vehicles to be ready to be delivered for testing. The testing is going to take about 12 months in late 2012, and revenue service then in the fall of 2013.
Let's face it, though, this is going to be a mess, isn't it, for traffic situation downtown?
It's going to cause some traffic disruption, yes, and probably on the scale of what we saw with the 4th Avenue underpass when it was under construction. We're hopeful, though, that the contractors can move with some alacrity and be able to get in and get out in relatively short order. The track work itself doesn't require excessive amount of disruption. It's that there are utilities that don't want to be caught under the tracks once they're installed. So those are the ones that will probably be more challenging as when we need to go under the pavement, move water and sewer lines to accommodate the future tracks and make sure that they're not underneath should they ever need to be repaired in the future.
Just a curiosity about the work. Is that a 24/7 job these contractors will be embarking on, or are there provisions in there to work some of the maybe off hours or what?
We will allow the contractor to choose their methods or means, and we will be encouraging the use of 24-hour work days when the surrounding businesses and properties can accommodate that kind of noise and disruption.
Let's talk about Grant Road. I was driving with my wife along Grant Road yesterday, and she was remarking, well, this is going to be quite an impact on the situation for the businesses, certainly along Grant. Where are we right now on that? The project, is it ready to begin?
We have broken the project up into, I believe, five project sequences. And we're ready to move forward with the first one, and that's the intersection of Oracle and Grant. And that would essentially reconstruct that intersection. It's one of the heavier, more congested intersections along the corridor. Then we tackle the next piece would be just to the east of there, and that would take us through 1st Avenue. Then we'll jump over to the far eastern end of the project, Swan and Grant, and work our way back west. The Oracle and Grant Road intersection is planned to begin this fall. We have utilities out there moving their lines to accommodate the widened roadway, and it will be the first intersection within the city of Tucson that would employ the indirect left turn as a means by which turning left off of Grant Road onto Oracle. And we are anxiously awaiting how the community accepts those. We are have found, at least through our simulations and our modeling, that they are going to allow for better through movement, lower congestion, and a safer intersection overall in the long run. So we're looking forward to that. Pima County is also considering one up at Oracle and Ina.
So the biggest change is no more left turns from Grant onto Oracle.
Well, there will be left turns, but it's going to be an indirect left turn. So you'll actually go through the intersection, make a U-turn at a signal, come back and turn right to make that left turn movement.
One of your officials was quoted as saying it has, in other places, reduced injury crashes by 30%.
When one evaluates the conflict points, and left turns create a lot of potential conflicts at intersections, that's where we get the tremendous improvement in safety. The intersection also has a smaller footprint so that it's easier for pedestrians to cross the intersection as well. And when you go and you look at Oracle and Grant, there's a surprisingly large amount of pedestrian traffic there. So I look forward to improving the pedestrian environment for those folks out there.
While we're talking about intersections, the red light cameras, of course, motorists continue to grumble about those. How many do we have right now in the city of Tucson, and what's your take on how they're doing?
Well, they are being managed by the Tucson Police Department. We provide a support role in that function, and it has made those intersections safer. They have seen a reduction in crashes at those particular locations. And so we do ask folks to be cautious at all our intersections, regardless of whether the camera's there or not.
Quickly here, Jim Glock, got about 2 minutes to go. What is the latest on the Kolb Road extension plan? This is the planned extension of North Kolb Road through Udall Park. I believe it was temporarily sidetracked, is that correct, by the council?
Mayor and council were asked to consider the master plan of the park, and as part of that consideration, as part of that master plan effort, the master plan acknowledged the roadway being placed on its western 100 within its western 150 feet. Mayor and council approved the master plan, but then asked that the mayor, the Ward 2 council office, and the RTA take a look at what options might be available for the location of the roadway. The city attorney has offered an opinion to mayor and council that there's really very little that can be done to change or to not build the roadway. The RTA plan is very specific. It's voter approved. So the road needs to go in. It's now a matter of where we locate it along there. And so we're still working with the ward office, the RTA, and the mayor's office to come to a resolution for that.
Yes, because that project was approved by the voters in 2006, part of the $2.1 billion 20-year RTA plan. Jim Glock, thank you very much for being a guest on the Buckmaster Show. And have you changed your mind about retiring?
Well, nope. I've actually committed myself at this point in time, so I don't have a choice.
All right.
I do need to leave at the end of this calendar year.
You will be missed, Jim. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot. Going to wrap it up here for the Buckmaster Show after we tell you that the Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. After all, today's tax day. You still have some time to get those taxes in. I'm Bill Buckmaster and buckmastershow.com. Have a great day.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
Are you listening?
I'm going to interrupt your thought pattern.
AM 1330, KJLL, South Tucson.